In the matter of Gonzalo Chirino versus Proud to Hall Incorporated, may we please have appearances of counsel?
Good morning. Robert J. DeGroote, DEGROOT, 60 Park Place, Stewart, along with Paulie Neckerton, NEKRITIN, 60 Park Place.
Hi. David Van Helser was our plaintiff class on 61 Walnut Street.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. DeGroote, please proceed.
May it please this honorable court, Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices. I guess I don't have to tell you that I like the opinion, the dissenting opinion of Judge Accorso a lot more than the majority opinion. The court system, I think, has provided a very fine vehicle to sort out what was a very complicated mosaic that had the intersection of federal regulations, federal statutes, motor carrier regulations, and where they came together and where they fell apart and how my client operated with her carriers. The sole issue that we are arguing now is a rather limited one. There is an issue of special damages presented, and it was presented initially by way of summary judgment to the trial court. The trial court granted partial summary judgment, and at that time, it set an order for damages. And I will concede that my predecessor, nor my adversary at the time, dealt with the specific criteria for the special damages that had later been defined and observed by the litigants and their counsel to be determined by a case Brinker. Now, the Third Circuit, which would certainly provide guidance in this area, has never entered an opinion as to what determines the special damages on this kind of a case.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
We're talking about $20,000. Is that what we're talking about? I want to first get the figure, and then I'm going to get to the next question.
We think it would be about $80,000.
Okay. But isn't there a settlement agreement? Forget about anything else. Wasn't there a settlement agreement in
this
case?
There was a settlement agreement that dealt with certain issues that could be raised on appeal to the appellate division.
And certain things that couldn't be raised
on
appeal.
That's correct.
And isn't one of the things that could not be raised on appeal the very point that you now want to argue to this court?
The issue, I suggest, sir, is exactly the opposite. They preserved the right because at the end of the litigation, the class counsel and my predecessor realized that the Brinker opinion and how it had been applied in the 9th, the 8th, and the 11th.
Forget about the cases just for this moment.
Fine.
Tell me where in the settlement agreement this issue has been preserved. Show me the language. Because my reading of the settlement agreement tells me that this thing isn't being litigated.
Do you have the settlement agreement with you?
I don't have it in front of me, no.
So 7A says, defendants shall limit their appeal and limit the issues raised to whether proof of exact damages sustained by each plaintiff as opposed to an estimate is required. Are you relying on that or some other part?
No, that is the precise thing that we're presenting to the court at this time.
So was the dispute that the dissent highlights whether this is exact damages versus a reasonable estimate?
Yes. And whether
let me finish, please. Or whether something was completely missed during the course of the back and forth. Counsel came forward with an estimate, and no one, it seems, bothered to dig in to figure out that there may have been a mistake there by including two kinds of fuel oil instead of one.
That's correct.
But that's a different issue, it would seem to me, than whether you have exact versus estimated numbers, no?
What we're arguing here is whether or not, according to the majority opinion, the trial counsel did not establish the procedural conditions precedent to be able to have raised that issue in the appellate division. The majority opinion said that the issue could not be raised because in the summary judgment applications it had not been contested.
Forget about the summary. Going back to the Chief Justice's question.
Yes.
The preservation in the settlement agreement for the appeal between exact damages and reasonable,
yes,
had to do with those credit card purchases for gas, not diesel fuel, correct?
That's correct.
The $20,000 dispute that you're now having with your adversary deals only with diesel fuel, which are exact damages. And your point of distinction with respect to the diesel fuel is really limited to that subject, correct?
That's correct.
So if we look at the settlement agreement, the issue that you're now trying to argue has already been placed off the table because you preserved reasonable and exact. That's only dealing with gas, private gas, not the diesel fuel.
In the strictest
sense, am I right?
In the strictest sense, yes. But in general, the opinions that define exact damages were ones that one could show, there were 300 gallons of diesel fuel, and here's the tax attendant to the 300 gallons of diesel fuel. Because of lack of records and inability to prove, there were two methods used to attempt to establish or to arrive at.
Wouldn't they be your records counsel, your client's records that you say you didn't have?
Yes.
Isn't that just a failure by trial counsel and by your client to do their due diligence and review the documents before entering into a settlement agreement? Now you come after the fact to this court saying, we didn't have the records because we didn't do anything to get them, and we're entitled to some leeway because of that?
There had been a determination and an offer that records, because of where the records were maintained, were destroyed in flooding at Sandy.
But somebody must have known in your, and I know you weren't the counsel,
yes,
you made that clear, but somebody must have known in your client's management that the independent contractors were permitted to put other charges other than diesel on that credit card.
It was an accepted practice and a tolerated practice.
So isn't that the key piece of knowledge that would have led, had people been entirely focused on the situation, to a realization that when the credit card provider produced records, those records were going to include both diesel and gasoline?
There was an awareness of it, yes, but how it affected the computation of double charging in the taxes was not factored in early on into the litigation.
But was there any reason for that?
Yeah.
As the surrogate of my client, I would have to take the mea culpa.
Was there anything beyond simply going through the spreadsheet that class counsel had presented to figure out the problem? Was there anything special required to unearth it at the get-go?
There had been no opinion ever prior that said that by attempting to create a fraction or using what I, as a trial lawyer, I would say is the accounting exception by creating, ratios that could be applied, there was nothing other than that. It did not segregate the specific taxes out from gasoline and fuel and any other expenses that would have been put on a WEX card.
Let me ask it this way. What was needed in order to figure out the problem that was later discovered?
Analysis of each of the bills.
Was there anything that stopped that from happening earlier?
No.
So the fact that this discovery was not complete did not impede that analysis?
I didn't hear you, I'm sorry.
The fact that discovery was not complete did not impede that analysis?
It did not.
Okay.
And the credit card, based upon the credit card bills, you could determine exact damages, correct?
That's correct.
It was the non-credit card ones where the debate was between exact and reasonable, correct?
There were a number of the small truckers who were subject of, you know, part of this transaction that paid cash and asked for, and then presented bills.
Now that's the reason. The reason why I was pointing to the settlement agreement that was saying the dispute is between whether or not the standard is exact or reasonable was dealing with all of the non-credit card purchases, correct?
That's correct, because the ratio was created by analysis of the credit cards.
What would you have us do at this point, Mr. DeGroot?
I'm sorry?
What would you have the court do? What relief do you seek?
I would have you follow the fine jurist below and send us back for a hearing to determine whether or not we use exact or we use the formulas as created.
Are you asking us to vacate the settlement agreement?
No, but well, you know, just to deal with that aspect of damages.
Explain to me how you get around your settlement agreement.
By the intent of the settlement agreement was to preserve that part of it so that there could be, with greater exactitude, a determination of what the double billing or the double charging the drivers for
You've already told us that all of the credit card purchases were exact damages, right?
The credit card purchases, to the extent that the expert or forensic accountant created the formula and the ratio, I suggest that that's not exact. It is a generalized method of arriving at a good faith estimate of specific damages.
When you entered into the settlement agreement, however,
yes,
you were taking into account only those small carriers who used cash, not credit, to preserve that issue. In other words, that's what both parties were thinking. Not the credit card purchases, the small carriers who used cash. That's what the intent was, or the belief was, when they entered into the settlement agreement.
That's correct.
So how do we now separate that? You have a meeting of the minds, you have an agreement as to what's in the settlement agreement, what's not, and the thing you're asking us now to put into the settlement, to take out of the settlement agreement, is something that both parties agreed was in the settlement agreement, that is, all the credit card purchases.
The request to the court here is to go back and suggest to the trial, or direct the trial court to revisit the initial summary, partial summary judgment motion.
But you already agreed.
If we rule the way you suggest, what was the settlement? There is no settlement. There's no value to this agreement. It's just a paper with some printing on it.
No, there's a settlement.
You're asking us to invalidate the entire settlement agreement. The majority of the settlement agreement is about the issues that you conceded. The methodology did not object to the methodology. It's about the credit card purchases. If we act the way you wish us to on the settlement agreement, there is no settlement agreement. There was never any settlement. It was fictitious.
No, there was a settlement agreement as to other issues, you know, but preserving this to be disputed. Because there was no...
What other issues were settled? This is about money, how much was owed, how much wasn't provided. If the amount that was provided is subject to appeal, according entire amount, including the credit cards, according to you, even though there was no objection, and as a matter of fact, you approved the methodology, what was the settlement? It's illusory. There's nothing there. It was just a piece of paper that meant nothing.
The settlement agreement has to be read in pari materi with the court's...
No, it's settlement agreement. It's an independent document signed by both parties.
The settlement agreement integrates the summary judgment ruling, which I suggest is one of the foundation items. It was taken into consideration with the parties because it was a controlling order of the court at that point.
Would you agree that we have to find in the settlement agreement the issues that you're raising now for it to proceed?
Yes, sir.
And your position is that it's there in 7A?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Tykulsker.
Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices, may it please the Court, I think the Court has focused on the essential issue here, which is we agree, I'm sorry, I think the Court has focused on the essential issue, which is that as a concession on the amount of damages that the plaintiffs were going to seek to prove at trial, we agreed that the defendants could take an appeal limited to two very specific and defined issues. The first of those was whether exact damages are required under the Motor Carrier Act. As I hear defense counsel at this point, they've more or less abandoned that argument in general. That is to say, they're not saying as a general proposition under this statute that exact damages are needed. They are willing to say if you prove, you know, damages that are actual, according to the standards of federal jurisprudence, that that's sufficient. I see nothing in their papers to say to the contrary. The second issue was about ownership. And on that issue, I haven't heard anything from defense counsel. And that issue was that there was a period of well over a year in which defendant, for reasons that remain unclear, decided that she was allowed to flout the federal regulations in dealing with the owner-operators on whom her business depended.
So we're here just on the basis of the issue in the dissent.
So you're not only are you here just on the basis of the issue that was raised in the dissent, but there are two other issues that seem to be floating around that the defense seems to want to bring in. The first of which is whether the, quote, Brinker methodology is the right methodology for calculating damages in circumstances where there is no lease. That is not before this court. That was knowingly and intelligently waived as part of the settlement agreement. The other issue is this 20,000 some odd and some cents issue around gasoline. Frankly, for the 18 months of litigation that existed, if that issue had been raised in the trial court, we could have had what I suspect would have been rather limited discovery, and we would have figured out if, in fact, the fundamental contention, namely that gasoline has nothing to do with the business, is correct. And if so, we would have modified the $380,000 judgment to take that into account. Never was this issue raised in the trial court. So never did we have an opportunity to do that discovery. And it's not for want of the ability of the defendants to ask to reconsider. Of course, they asked to reconsider nearly every single judgment that was entered in this case. So what we're dealing with is a judgment, a matter that was knowingly and intelligently waived by the defense that should not be here. And that's fundamentally the problem.
So you agree with the question that the Chief asked before, that the issue being raised has to be found within the four corners of the document of the settlement agreement, correct?
Absolutely. We gave up a lot. We gave up hundreds of thousands of dollars of damages in order to narrow the issues that could be raised on appeal.
But you've also gotten, you would concede, an unfair windfall because the failure of your adversary to make a timely objection meant that your clients, I'll use that broadly, were able to have not deducted from their pay the taxes for their personal gasoline, correct?
I would, yes, that's true, but that makes a set of assumptions that I don't know are true. That is to say, I believe it is probably the case that you can't use the gasoline, or they did more accurately, that they didn't use the gasoline in the course of the business. And therefore, what Your Honor said is absolutely correct.
Thank you. Or your predecessor mistakenly had put that on the table.
That is correct. I mean, I would assume, again, I'm making a set of assumptions, but I would assume, as I say, that it is probably correct that there is $20,000 of extra judgment that should be eliminated. And frankly,
did you ever think back before the appellate division when this was raised, why don't we just give them their $20,000.
I made that offer.
Oh, okay. Because I was wondering, this is not a whole lot of money to be litigating over.
I couldn't agree more. I made that offer. I thought it was a foolish, penny-wise, and you know, I think that fundamentally, Your Honor, to be fair to my adversary, they were hoping to raise the ownership issue. But the ownership issue is, in fact, not properly before this court. As I pointed out, there was a 3-0 vote on that issue about ownership in the appellate division, and there was no petition for certification. So it's not properly before this court. They were hoping to, as it were, smush it in and
we're
move
only here. We're only here on the issue raised in the dissent. We don't have to spend time on this.
I agree.
No smushing.
I agree. They did raise it, and I did challenge it, as your honors have seen. So, yes. I mean, I don't know why, you know, as a business matter, this appeal was pursued. And I said that to counsel this morning. I said that as soon as I got the brief because I realized that the amount of effort that we would have to do in the appellate division, I wasn't expecting it to send, but the amount of effort that we would have to do in the appellate division would far outweigh $20,000. So we might as well just do it, save everybody some money and time. But they refused, and that's why we're here. I mean, they could have, frankly, they could have done it, you know, before bringing the appeal to this court because it's going to cost them more money, it seems to me, in this court.
But you get to spend the morning with us.
Well, that is a great pleasure, and I've learned lots of law, and I thank your honors for that opportunity.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
Many things, but I think I'll waive that opportunity.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under